Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved, lots of senior correspondents, and of course the host and founder is Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. On today's program, she'll be talking with Judith Stein. Judith Stein is the president of the nonprofit Nonpartisan Center for Medicare Advocacy, and she's going to talk about what to do if you're denied coverage that your doctor deems medically necessary, and she's also going to discuss improvement standards. But let's kick it off right now with a very, very interesting, fascinating guest, Dick Cavett. As you know, he was the host of the Dick Cavett Show on ABC and PBS. He also hosted talk shows on USA, HBO, and CNBC cable networks. He's written a new book. It's titled Brief Encounters, Conversations, Magic Moments, and Assorted Hijinks, published by Henry Holt. Here now is Carol Marks in conversation with Dick Cavett.
This is an honor.
Carol, at last they've stopped keeping us apart.
Dick Cavett, welcome to A Touch of Grey.
Well, you know, something just struck me when I heard you say Brief Encounters, the title.
Yes.
Noel Coward wrote a play called Brief Encounters 65 years ago. Do you think I'll be sued by the Coward Estate?
Not at all.
I wish I hadn't thought of that. By the way,
yes.
I have the anagram curse.
Yes.
When I see a word or a name, I can see all the other things it spells. It's weird. A brain problem. How old were you when you realized that rearranging the letters of C-A-R-O-L-E spells another six-letter word?
I never realized it. The only thing I realized was my mother named me after Carol Lombard because she had a great sense of humor.
Gee.
So
well,
what's
Oracle.
Okay, I like that.
I want you to use that. You might have gone on through life never knowing that.
Well, bless you, because I think that's, we need some oracles up there in Washington that really see things right. So who knows? We never know. Now, you started your career as a comedy writer, and your writing skills have always been highly praised. But do you think that your skills have benefited from some very helpful family genes, too?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And funny you should ask that, because I just came across a trove of letters from my parents over the years that I had thought were long lost. And both of them were wonderful writers. They were school teachers and endured the Depression, with a capital D, where my father taught Comstock, Nebraska farmers' children English for $600 a year.
Wow.
But he was a terrific, funny writer of letters and other things.
So that's been a blessing, and then you've developed it so beautifully on your own. Now, your memoir starts out talking about your childhood, and you've said you've always been fascinated by celebrities, and particularly the performers of an older generation, and I know you literally worship Groucho Marx, and you had him on your show a number of times. What were some of the things about him that most people don't know and made him such a special human being and entertainer?
Assume that the perceptive and intelligent ones know that he's probably the greatest comic talent ever to come out of this country, with so many skills, writing, singing, acting, wit, brilliant, a self-educated, vastly self-educated man, who, and this is in tune with what you asked me, don't know about him? The fact probably that he sincerely wished that he would be remembered for his writing, not for his performing. And there's a book you can get. You can Amazon it, Groucho Marx and Other Short Stories. A collection of all Groucho's writings, which he loved to do. And he was friends with T.S. Eliot, and he read novels, and he wrote pieces of humor as far back as the 20s in The New Yorker, signed Julius H. Marx. That's how far back they were.
Wow.
Before he was Groucho.
And he kind of invented irreverent comedy, and I really didn't quite realize that until you put it into a proper perspective.
Yes. By the way, do you want a quick Groucho story?
Of course.
one of those irritating tourist see the stars homes buses pulled up and driver with the microphone said, aren't we lucky? It's Groucho Marx's house. And look, there his gardener out there working with roses. Let's go talk to Groucho's gardener. He takes the mic out there. The man has his hat pulled down. In fact, it's Groucho. He never realizes that and asks, tell us about your job and your boss. And the voice said, the money's lousy, but he lets me sleep with his wife.
And that's irreverent comedy, is it not?
Unless that man's hearing us now, he probably doesn't know that. And the people in the bus were stunned, of course.
I bet. Now, when it comes to all the marvelous actors you had on the show, I'll always treasure the ones you've had with Richard Burton, because I don't think he got the recognition he deserved as an actor. So what do you remember about those interviews? Because wasn't he very private? And how did you get him to really open up so beautifully?
I was surprised that he did it. He requested that I come see him backstage at Camelot to meet me. We spoke. We got on well. As we crossed the darkened stage, what they call the ghost light was on, and Burton stood in the center of the stage and suddenly did a soliloquy from Henry V. I was the only spectator. It was thrilling. He came on the show. He didn't want an audience. I talked him into having an audience, and if it bothered him, we would dismiss them, pretending we had a technical problem. As soon as he got his first laugh, his face relaxed, and he had a great time. And instead of the half hour he came for, I squeezed a total of 4 half hours out of him. And to me, the greatest moment in them is when I had the courage, by the time we were in the fourth one, to say, talk about alcohol, as he and Miss Taylor were drunk. And he suddenly says, well, I think I've probably said enough about alcohol. But then he went on saying, maybe it'll do some good. And he gives an eloquent 4 or 5 gripping minutes talking about alcoholism to the camera, to me, and alcohol groups have acquired it and used it. And it's on YouTube. Richard Burton talks about alcohol, I think it's called.
Wow, you know, that is something. And, you know, you usually have been the one to ask intriguing questions. But wasn't it mighty strange to be asked by Steve Jobs, Apple's founder, who was considering hiring you to do some commercials, and he asked you, how does it feel to be Dick Cavett? And what
did
you say?
The man from the high-powered ad agency who was at that dinner where I met Steve apologized. I'm sorry about that stupid question. But we remained friends, and as each new Apple thing came out, Apple One in those days was coming out, each time he sent me one, and I put it in a closet, and about the seventh one, he said, if I'm sending you one more new computer, learn to use it. So I did, and here we are.
And here we are. And, of course, you were very fond of Johnny Carson. You both came from Nebraska.
Yeah.
And how were you able to remain really good friends with him when you did go on to have a show that was competing with him in a way?
It didn't work out that way for Joan Rivers.
No.
I don't know. I was always surprised at how much Johnny liked me, since he was not known to have particularly numerous friends and was one of the most socially awkward and inept people I ever knew. Sometimes I would protect him from audience members who would catch him backstage being where they weren't supposed to be, and his attempts to speak with them were just painful. And yet he was a master when he walked out, snubbed out one of the cigarettes that finally killed him, and stepped out to his entrance music on the show and was, as I say, a master of the hour. And probably the happiest hour of his life was that part of the day when he was performing.
Yes, I think that's true sometimes.
Yeah.
And I wanted to also tell you that I think one of the reasons that everybody loves you is you have a very, very unique and very nice voice. And finally, I want to say that in our current soundbite culture, I almost feel the art of conversation is dead. Your shows certainly prove that good conversation definitely can make good television. So would you ever consider doing another one?
Oh, I probably would, yes. Sometimes I get the yearning, and then somebody says, you don't want to go through all that again, do you? It would be nice to do it occasionally.
Right.
Or to do something like the great special with Mel Brooks that was on HBO. Something like Dick Cavett's Watergate, which, by the way, if you missed it on PBS, you must stop listening to us now. Go to the computer and Google Dick Cavett's Watergate, and you will see how the great unindicted co-conspirator and criminal president that we had at that time and I did not get along. I had nearly everybody from Watergate
on
the show, Carol. It was amazing.
Geniuses
put together a stunning hour from that.
Absolutely.
Dick Cavett's Watergate will bring it to you.
And I love that whole era, and I love watching your video. And I recommend your book, which is taken from your columns in the New York Times. And I want to say just one last thing. I was really impressed that so many people responded to your columns, which brought forth another column, which shows that everybody is enjoying them. So thank you.
Apparently, yes. People like the sex, the violence, my criminal past, my obituaries for James Gandolfini and Jonathan Winters and Sid Caesar. But wait a minute. I'm in danger of plugging my book.
Well, we forgive you and we love you for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Oracle.
That's Dick Cavett in conversation with Carol Marks. His book is titled Brief Encounters, Conversations, Magic Moments, and Assorted Hijinks, published by Henry Holt. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups with Carol Marks, continues right here in just a moment.
A domain name is your key to doing business around the world, right from your office, living room, or even your couch. And finding the right name is as easy as a domain name search at hostingforcheap.com. Just enter the domain you want in the search box and we'll give you the results, along with similar domains you may not have considered. Most people looking for goods or services start on the web. Unfortunately, many small businesses can't afford to pay someone else to build their website. That's where hostingforcheap.com comes in. We can show you how to create a website for yourself. Because hostingforcheap.com isn't just about domain names, it's a one-stop shop for anything you need to get online. From building your own website to attracting new customers to securing their data when they make a purchase, hostingforcheap.com has you covered from the moment you decide you want to put your business on the web. That's hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, here's Carol Marks in conversation with Judith Stein. Judith Stein is the president of the nonprofit, nonpartisan Center for Medicare Advocacy, and she's going to talk to Carol about what to do if you're denied coverage that your doctor deems medically necessary, and she'll also discuss improvement standards.
Now, when it comes to Medicare, I've been reading that more people are getting turned down, you know, and then they want to go to appeal it, and that's becoming more difficult, and most people don't know, and I didn't know for quite a while, really, what the steps were that you had to go through, and so why don't we tell people what the first two levels of appeal are?
Certainly. Unfortunately, yes, there are times when Medicare is denied when it should be granted. So first let me say that if a person needs a particular kind of health care or physical, speech, or occupational therapy, and they find that they're told that Medicare won't cover it, and their physician thinks it's necessary, they should definitely consider appealing that Medicare denial. One of the things I would recommend they do to start is, to look at our website and just look at the care level. So if it's home health care or if it's outpatient therapy, they'd be able to find for free on our website very basic, the counterpart to a page and a half of what Medicare should be covering. And if it sounds like Medicare should be covering, they should definitely move to the first level of appeal. And if they can't get to the website or they're not certain but they know the doctor is ordering this care, don't wait. Take the first step so that you don't miss a deadline. The first step is often a matter of calling the entity that represents Medicare, which is actually insurance companies, not the government. And usually the person should have received a written notice that Medicare won't cover. And that notice should tell them how to file what's known as an expedited appeal, the first level of appeal. If they aren't, and if they have that notice, they should call that number right away and say that their care is medically necessary and has been ordered by their physician. And they will then be given the opportunity to provide any information they want the deciders to look at prior to making a decision. And if the doctor thinks that it's necessary and that their quality of life will be interrupted or they'll be harmed, they should get a decision within 72 hours of that initial request for review by Medicare. If that's denied, they can seek a redetermination, and they'll also get a notice as to where to send that. If you stay the course, you usually will eventually get coverage if the doctor thinks it's medically necessary.
Judith, the Center for Medicare Advocacy has filed a lawsuit because it seems to take longer than the mandated 90 days that the law gives Medicare people in the appeals process to operate. It takes a lot longer than that for people to find out about how their case has been handled.
That's correct. Another thing the center does, is, as you're indicating, is when we see something that's going wrong that we can't fix on a one case-by-case basis, we do have a small litigation team, and we do, if necessary, go to court on behalf of our clients. In this case, as you say, the law says that Medicare appeals each step should take no more than 90 days from the time of a request to the time of a decision. And the ALJ, the place where beneficiaries have the best chance of getting coverage, it's the third level of appeal, takes way longer than 90 days from the time you request a hearing to the time you get a decision. That violates the law, and so we have filed a lawsuit on behalf of all Medicare beneficiaries to get the government to get the resources in place and perhaps to look more carefully at the initial denials that shouldn't be happening so that people don't have to wait so long when they do request a hearing.
Well, because it is a very, confusing and lengthy process, I'm so happy that the Center for Medicare Advocacy does have self-help packets for the various kinds of denials for Medicare as well as advocacy tips. And they also have a full appeals process packet. And so I think that that's why it's even more important than ever that our listeners go on your website and, and try to get that, the very basic information really spelled out in a way that everyone can understand.
I hope that they will use those resources and know that we are, as we speak, updating that material and trying to make it even more user-friendly. And we're doing our best to meet the needs of people around the country. As I say, we don't have funding to represent each individual, so we're doing our best to make the resources we have as useful as possible.
Now, I commend the Center for Medicare Advocacy for being very successful in a landmark federal Medicare case. And tell us about why the case GMO versus Sebelius, why it was successfully passed, and what wonderful thing it means for everybody, I think, who is in the system and on Medicare.
Thank you. Yes, first let me say that we brought this another case in January 2011 on behalf of Glenda Jimmo, who's an individual Medicare beneficiary living in Vermont, and what's called all other people similarly situated, everyone else who has a similar problem. And also five organizations, the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, Paralyzed Vets of America, the Alzheimer's Association, Parkinson's Action Network, and as well as the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare and United Cerebral Palsy, you can see how important this problem was for people all over the country. And the problem was, and unfortunately remains, that people with long-term and chronic conditions such as multiple sclerosis or paralysis or Parkinson's or Alzheimer's are regularly denied Medicare and therefore access to necessary care because the underlying condition won't improve. So unfortunately, as of right now, there's no cure for Parkinson's or MS, for example. But we know that therapy and medical services, nursing, is often very, very important to help people maintain their condition or keep from getting worse or to slow deterioration. And when therapy or nursing is necessary for those purposes to maintain their condition, then individuals should be able to get Medicare just as if the skilled care, the nursing or the therapy, was needed to improve the person's condition. And that applies regardless of whether the individual is in a nursing home, needs home health care, or outpatient physical, speech, or occupational therapy. And let me say this applies regardless of the person's underlying diagnosis. It doesn't have to be a particular diagnosis. And so we brought this lawsuit on behalf of people with the various conditions I mentioned and Mrs. Jimmo and other named individual beneficiaries from around the country. And after a certain amount of litigation and court activity, we were able to settle this case in January 2013 with the federal government. And now that settlement is being implemented. And what it means, listeners, is that if you or somebody you know or is being denied access to Medicare and necessary care to maintain their condition, keep them from getting worse or getting worse more quickly, then if they need skilled nursing or therapy, and that means that the skilled person, the professional therapist or nurse, is needed to make sure the care is safe and effective, then Medicare should be covering, and those individuals should be able to get their fourth payment and access to that necessary care.
That's Judith Stein in conversation with Carol Marks. If you want more information, go to MedicareAdvocacy.org. That's MedicareAdvocacy.org. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/GOV delivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/GOV delivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Interesting how a program such as this stands out from the pack, because we target, that's a media term, an audience that's over 50 years of age. I mean, people of all ages are allowed to listen, but basically this is for people who've been around the block a few times. And that is so unusual in the media, which is basically geared toward youth. And believe me, I have nothing against youth. I think we need lots and lots of it. That being said, Just as those of you who listen to the program know about the group Gun Hill Road, a rock band from the 70s that got back together after 40 years, went in the studio and made a brand new album and relived their youthful dreams and passions and did so very, very, shall we say, exquisitely. We also have another case of that, a fellow by the name of John Haber, who is the owner of Alto Music, a major East Coast instrumental retail chain. And he went back in the studio and brought together three musicians from three different decades. And they call the group Deck 3 on Raddest Music. He has his own label. And after a 25-year break, he has proved it's never too late to follow your dreams. And I think that that's something that I see as one of the messages of this program, A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, that It's never too late to follow your passion and to follow your dreams. And so many people feel that, you know, they reach a certain stage in life, they reach a certain age in life, and they're over the hill, they're washed up, they're done. It's a youth-oriented world. Nobody wants to hear from the old guy or the old gal. But that is so untrue. Not to mention, there are lots and lots of people who are, as Carol Marx would say, Carol Marx, the host and founder of this program, seasoned citizens, who are unto themselves a great target audience and active marketplace. So I encourage anybody out there, 60, 70, 50, 80, if you did something when you were young or there was something you wanted to do, aside from pole vaulting or diving from cliffs, why don't you do it? Painting, poetry, writing, music. These are all wonderful endeavors that can instill youth and vibrancy and passion in your soul and keep you young for years to come. So we'll be talking with John Haber next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
Whoa, a digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Glad you like it. We can finally toss out that old massive stereo.
Mom, you can't just throw out electronics. They need to be recycled or donated.
Recycled? Like aluminum cans?
Yeah. You just go to greenergadgets.org, enter your zip code, and it tells you where the nearest certified recycling center is.
I knew that.
Okay, Mom.
Recycling electronics is as easy as buying them. Log on to greenergadgets.org to find electronics recycling options near you.
Simple mess. Put on your dress.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, as promised, we have John Haber in conversation. He's the owner of Alto Music, a major East Coast instrumental retail chain, and he just released a new album, and you hear it in the background. It's called Deck 3, and it's on the Raddest Music label. And he's back into making music after a 25-year break, proving it's never too late to follow your dreams. So, John, you have had an amazing career. You have been a musician when you were in your 20s. You went on to become a businessman and an entrepreneur in a business based upon music and the arts. And then, later in life, not that you're that old, you're certainly a lot younger than I am, you kind of fulfilled your dream and you created a band. And now you are a musician with a band, with an album, and with a business, and I would say you're a pretty busy guy, aren't you?
I certainly am. With that old adage about that guy with one leg in a kicking contest of some type, I think I'm challenging that guy. I'm very busy.
That's pretty zen. I've heard of one hand clapping, and I've heard of the one arm paper hanger, but I haven't heard of the one legged man in the kicking contest. That's one I'll remember. You were let's talk about you when you were in your 20s. What kind of a young guy were you when it came to music?
Well, I'm a big, you know, I was out playing the 80s. You know, I was a big, my whole music influence is really were the Beatles. I mean, that's what really got me totally geared up on music as a kid, even though I kind of missed the Beatles when they were still around. I didn't really discover them until, you know, the early 70s, when I was like 7 years old, but that really is what got me into playing guitar. And in the 80s, you know, you had Van Halen influences, you had the harder rock influences. I kind of absorbed all of that, you know. I was into all types of, like, Simon Garfunkel, the Beatles. I loved all that stuff, and I also loved all the 70s Aerosmith. Phantom of Kiss at one point in time was really into them, and then you had the 80s with the rock stuff. So I kind of like put that all in a blender and kind of came up with what I do.
So you were the kind of kid that and when I say kid, I mean teenager and guy in your young 20s. You were the kind of a kid that I used to play to when I was still in rock and roll radio. I was a DJ back in the early 70s on WNEW-FM in New York. And
oh, that's
yeah, I was there 70.
Well, I'm listening to that.
Yeah, 1972, I did the mornings there. And I also, for 10 years, was out in Los Angeles at a major rock station, KMET. So you were the generation that we used to play to. And you had a band, and you played music, but suddenly you wound up in business. And just tell us quickly how you wound up being in the music store business and Alto Music. Tell us a bit about it for those that are not familiar with it.
Well, I mean, the first job I ever had was I got a job at the local music store where I shopped. and when I was 16, I believe. I just turned 16. The guy who ran that store said, "Hey, kid, do you still need a job?" I must have was one to ask for one. So I got hired, and I really had an acumen for, you know, business. I was a good salesperson. Had a good feel for it. When I decided, you know, the band, I went to school, even, you know, while I was in school, college, I still kept that job a couple of days a week and played in the band as well. And then, you know, the band was getting a little tired towards the end there, and I said, you know what, let me open my own shop. And I was 24 when I did that, and kind of put the band on hold and opened a shop and grew it, and, you know, to what it is now. The whole time I was doing that, I was still writing music. That's something I never stopped doing. So it wasn't like I just stopped everything altogether for a long period of time and got back into it.
When you say a music shop, a music store, we're not talking about a record store. We're talking about a music store for musicians, correct?
Yeah, we sell guitars, amplifiers, keyboards, you know, pro audio gear, a lot of recording equipment. We have three locations in and around New York, the metro area, and we do a lot of online business as well.
Thank goodness it wasn't a record store.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, it was, probably wouldn't have been the best. I had once thought about adding records way back then.
Well, it's just amazing what happened to that, and we can touch on that in a moment, but I do want to keep the story going forward and bringing it full cycle. You have a band called Deck 3, and when I first saw it, I thought it was December, D-E-C, and then my son told me, no, it's Deck. It stands for Decade. Decade 3. So explain the name and tell us a bit about the band.
Well, how the project started is, as I said earlier, I never stopped writing, so I was constantly doing that. And then the beginning of 2013, I go, you know, let's do a real record. I have all these songs, and over the last 20 years, you know, some of my songs, I've had quite a few songs, you know, on TV shows, and Atlantic Records was holding my songs, one of my songs for a while, so I knew there was something there. You know, as my demos got some attention. So I said, let me do a real record. I'll take the songs that I've been writing and, you know, make them into proper album versions. So when I started doing that, all of a sudden my creative juices started flowing again, and I ended up writing like a ton of new stuff. And the record ended up being mostly brand new songs that I had written in the last year, with a few of the older ones making the cut. And so as I have Chris Saltpaw, who's the vocalist, does all the harmonies as well on the record. An amazing musician and songwriter himself. He did all the vocals, and then I had Mike Kalasian on drums, and he's also a very talented guy, guitar player, engineer. So that was my core three guys, and we had some other people pop in, you know, Shane Keister down from Nashville, play piano on a few of the songs. But as I looked around, I said, now Chris is older than I am, and Mike's younger than I am. Mike was born in the early 80s. Chris was about 10 years older than me, so he's born in the mid-50s, and I was born in the mid-60s. So I took it on. That's how I got the name Deck 3. We were all born in different decades. And we all did have a variety of different influences. But we had shared a lot. There were always a few that each of us had that were separate from the others.
I'd imagine you learned from each other. And I'd imagine one of the things about the rock era is that, you know, pop culture stops being pop culture when it develops a rich history. And I think that's what happened to rock and roll. I think we never expected, and I go back a couple of decades before you, and I remember when rock and roll was just this fad music that kids liked, and nobody ever thought it would last. And then as I got into the business, it started to develop a history where there were branches. You know, there was this kind of rock and that kind of rock and this. And now there are so many branches, nobody knows what rock music is anymore. And I have to say, I love your album because it's got some real rock and roll on it, and it's got some good country-oriented rock. I don't know if you feel that way, but I love that boundary between what I consider the old, you know, southern rock. And, you know, I get into trouble when I talk categories with musicians, but let's just say I like your album.
Well, thank you. No, I'm definitely influenced by a lot of the modern country music that's come out, which is what rock and roll really was in the 70s.
Of course.
It, you know,
yeah.
Very similar. Listen to a band like Little Big Town. It sounds like Fleetwood Mac. Some guys like Keith Urban, or, you know, it sounds like the Eagles, a lot of it. So there's a lot of, you know, similarities. And when I grew up, you know, I would listen to AM radio or whatever. You would hear Elton John into Kiss into like an R&B song into, you know, there's this big diverse, now everything is so, you know, segmented. It's interesting, I go to Germany quite a bit, and the radio stations over there are still like they were in America in the 70s. You'll hear like a Celine Dion song into a Kiss song into a Def Leppard song into a Sinatra song. I mean, it's amazing,
yeah.
Some of the stations over there.
I miss that to a degree because it gave us a common culture. Today it's very hard to be heard because it's so fragmented, and plus with the Internet, and I love the Internet, but I also like the idea of there being a common culture. It's a very noisy world today, John. Very noisy, very hard to be heard, very hard to be discovered and to get anybody's attention. Attention deficit disorder is a national plague, and it's not easy. The fact that you made an album is also admirable because today most musicians put out a single, maybe an EP, two tracks. You put out a whole album. Not bad. That's a pretty good thing to do.
Yeah, no, it's something I wanted to do, and I had the material. You know, I didn't just start throwing a bunch of junk on there. I feel pretty proud of the fact that the album is strong throughout. It has a lot to offer people in different styles of music.
So one of the things I want to ask you, having run Alto Music for all these years and being one of the leading music store operators in America, I understand that you were named one of the 10 top music store chains in the country.
Mm-hmm.
How has the instrumentation changed over the years? And in selling music instruments and music support systems to young people, how are the young people different today than, say, 10 years ago or 20 years ago in terms of what they're buying?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a great question. I could probably talk for like 2 hours about this. I'll try not to. I mean, musical instruments, like an acoustic guitar, really hasn't changed. Electric guitar, for the most part, they haven't changed. They've been the same, you know, throughout history. Today, young kids, though, it's a lot harder to sit down with a guitar and learn how to play that. It's certainly, you don't get instant gratification from doing it. It hurts your fingers in the beginning. It takes time, takes effort. You have to understand a different language by looking at the music and how you deal with that. As opposed to, you can, you know, buy a keyboard, just put your finger on something and call yourself, you know, boom. You can have any beat you want, or it can play itself. That's a lot easier to do. Kids now also have so much more to take their attention away from music, video games, the internet. So that is a challenge the music industry is having, is to get more music makers. Obviously, that's the only thing that could keep us all going, and from instrument makers to people who make music to people who make, you know, write songs and record them and, you know, and play on the radio and so on and so forth. This is, you know, a whole industry is all tied together. So without people, new ones coming into the fold, it's going to be a challenging, you know, that's what the challenge is to get new people in there. So, that's what I've seen over the, you know, the difference. There's so many different ways things can get recorded now. So it's really been democratized a lot that somebody with not a ton of money can make a good sounding recording.
Yeah, and also somebody without a lot of talent could be sounding good with the producers, with the digital wizardry that they perform. In my opinion, that's why a lot of the singers all sound the same, because it's the same producers making them all sound perfect pitch.
Right, well, yeah, you can't invent talent. Certainly, and part of the problem of democratizing it is that it gives everybody a voice at the table, including people, some maybe who shouldn't have a voice at the table. But I think overall, as far as that goes, it's, you know, you probably come across music that you would not necessarily hear that's good. There's really good music out there. Just you have to weed through a few things to find it.
Absolutely. And the gatekeepers of the big corporate musical venues are harder to get to and more difficult to deal with. John Haber, how can people get your Deck 3 album and learn more about you and this group?
Oh, thanks. Right, the album's available at cdbaby.com, amazon.com, iTunes. We have a Facebook page. It's Deck 3 Bands, facebook.com/Deck3, D-E-C, the number 3, band.com. And we have a website at Deck3, the number 3, band.com. That's D-E-C. 3band.com.
Excellent. I really enjoyed talking to you. I, as you mentioned before, we could talk for hours because each one of the little things we touched on has a whole subtopic that we can get into. So I hope I get the chance to someday meet you personally and have you back on the show and get a little deeper into all of this. In the meantime, I wish you the best of luck with the album in 2015, Deck 3, and of course, ongoing success, and keep bringing more people into the music fold at Alto Music. John Haber, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for your time. It was great. It was a pleasure.
Fascinating story. John Haber in conversation here on A Touch of Grey. If you want more information about his band, it's deck3band.com, DEC3band.com. Coming up next, Steve Wiseman joins us. He's going to talk about a recent FBI warning to businesses about Iranian hackers. That and more coming your way when A Touch of Grey continues.
Simple mess. That's what I meant, I guess. You got your own life.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/GOV delivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/GOV delivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, and we're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Steve Wiseman is a prolific author, he is an astute attorney, and he is a champion against fraud. As a matter of fact, he has a website that is titled scamicide.com. He's written the Bible about scams, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. His new book is called Identity Theft Alert, also published by Prentice Hall. So scammers, watch out. Steve's in town. And here now is Steve Wiseman on A Touch of Grey to talk about a recent FBI warning to businesses about Iranian hackers. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, one of my mottos is things aren't as bad as you think. They're worse. And this is, I guess, another example of that. The FBI has just sent out a confidential warning to American businesses about an imminent threat of hacking by, no, not North Koreans and not Chinese, Iranian hackers. They may or may not be state-sponsored. And the attack appears to be focused on the always vulnerable educational institutions, colleges and universities, as well as energy companies, airlines, and defense contractors. And the FBI warning provides detailed technical information about the different types of malware used in the attack, as well as information about techniques such as spear phishing that's being used by the hackers to enable their malware to be unwittingly downloaded onto the computer networks of the targeted companies. This is the way that most of the sophisticated malware does get onto the computers. It appears at this point to be how the North Korean hackers managed to target Sony. Spear phishing, how it works is the victim receives a seemingly legitimate email message addressed to the victim by name that lures the victim into clicking on a link that downloads the malware used to attack the company. Now, this particular Iranian hacking scheme may be the same one recently identified as Operation Cleaver by the security firm Cylance, where they uncovered attacks on more than 50 companies in 16 countries, including the United States. As for us as individuals, we need to recognize a couple things. First, regardless of how careful we are at protecting the security of our own personal information, that information, as certainly was seen in the recent Sony hacking, is only as safe as the companies with the weakest security practices that hold our information. Therefore, wherever possible, you should limit the companies and governmental agencies that have your personal information. And the second lesson, and this one really is important to all of us, this spear phishing technique is used by identity thieves and hackers against us as individuals, too. It's a way that these hackers and identity thieves get us to click on links in what appear to be legitimate emails from companies or friends whom we trust. That link contains malware that goes into our computer, goes into our smartphone, goes into our laptop, steals all the personal information, including banking information, credit card information, social security numbers, and uses that information to make us a victim of identity theft. So the key here is, again, my other motto, trust me, you can't trust anyone. Whenever you get an email message that has a link for you to click on or an attachment for you to download, don't. Don't until you've actually confirmed that it's legitimate, because even if it looks like it's coming from a legitimate source, it may not.
Thank you, Steve Wiseman. And again, if you want more information about fraud and scams, check out Identity Theft Alert, published by Prentice Hall, written by Steve Wiseman. Also, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, a Steve Wiseman book. Scamaside.com is the website to visit. Steve Wiseman, a regular feature of A Touch of Gray. Thank you, Beverly Santanella, on the front line, our producer putting it all together. And certainly a big thank you to Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. On behalf of all of us at A Touch of Gray, please join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.